The month of June has been hijacked by the anti-Christian culture to show their pride in something God calls an abomination. When you support AFR, you help us continue to stand for godly values and provide the resources for you to stay in the know about the enemy's tactics. To say thank you for your gift this month, we'll give you the booklet, Inside the LGBTQ Push of the 1990s, to help strengthen your convictions. Just go to afr.net/offers. afr.net/offers.
Welcome to Real Truth for Today with Pastor Jeff Shreve, Senior Pastor of First Baptist Church in Texarkana, Texas. Now, here's Pastor Jeff.
Well, good morning and welcome to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here. Hope you're having a great Wednesday morning. It is hump day, and Wednesday nights are big nights at First Baptist Texarkana because we have services. We have children's service and a youth service, middle school and high school, and then our adult service and choir practice and connection classes and all sorts of things. We have a big meal on Wednesday night that we provide for everyone for a reduced cost, and it's just a great time. You know, it's that midweek lift. I've always been a fan of midweek service. When I was at Champion Forest Baptist Church, I was the Wednesday night preacher. Damon Shook so graciously allowed me to preach on Wednesday nights, and we'd have 500, 600, 700, 800, 900, 1,000 people that would come on a Wednesday night. You know, it wasn't always 1,000, but we got up there, and it was just a great time, and people really love that, because the thing about Wednesdays is people who come, they want to come. They're not saying, well, I have to come, you know, it's Sunday, I'm supposed to come. I mean, you're there because you want to be there. I always want people to come to church because they want to come, not because they felt browbeaten to come. And it's a lot more fun to preach to people that want to be there than people that don't want to be there. You're always going to have a certain amount of that. But anyway, Wednesday nights are great nights. I'm preaching tonight on Hebrews chapter 12, such a great passage of Scripture, verses 18 to 29. And I'm calling it, you know, Hebrews talks about the two mountains. You have Mount Sinai, the mountain of law, and you have Mount Zion, the heavenly Jerusalem. That's the mountain of grace. I'm calling this sermon, Escape to Which Mountain? W-H-I-C-H with a question mark. And if you remember, there was a couple of movies, several movies that were made, Escape to Which, W-I-T-C-H, Mountain. So I'm kind of playing off that. But which mountain are you going to? Are you going to the mountain of law to get right with God? Or are you going to the mountain of grace? You know, it's interesting when you think about Sinai, the mountain where Moses was given the Ten Commandments. It's the mountain of law. It's the mountain of fear. It's the mountain of the awesomeness of God. But it's the mountain of judgment. You don't want to go to that mountain. You go to that mountain first to see that you're a sinner so that you go to the other mountain. And I was thinking about this. You know, at the Great White Throne Judgment, the final judgment, every single person there is going to try and plead his case, her case, before the Lord that they're good people and they deserve access to the Lord, to heaven. They did all these good things, and they have no idea that if you keep the whole law and yet stumble in one point, you're guilty of all. And God is not going to judge people by their good works. He's going to judge them by their sins. You know, you go before the judge, the traffic court. He doesn't look at all the times that you stayed within the speed limit. He looks at all the times you are caught speeding. He looks at all your traffic violations. And if you have 1,000 speeding tickets, it's pretty hard to say that you're a good driver and you always, most of the time, obey the law. Obviously, you don't. Well, I want to talk to you today about this subject, holding people accountable. You know, I was thinking about this as it relates to politics. So often we don't hold politicians accountable. We, you know, when election time rolls around, the guys would come out, the guys that have been in office, ladies that have been in office for a long time, and they promise, oh, I'm going to do this. If you reelect me, I'm going to do this and this and this. It's like, yeah, why haven't you done that? You know, I thought about that when, you know, Biden was running against Trump, and then obviously he couldn't go anymore. And so they just passed the baton without a vote to Kamala Harris. And she's talking about running against Trump, all these great things she's going to do. And it's like, well, you've been the vice president for 4 years. Why haven't you done any of that stuff? And when they asked her, what are you going to do different from what Joe Biden did? She said, I can't think of anything. So she was just going to be Biden 2.0. And so all these great promises, it's like, yeah, but we're not experiencing that now. Now, there's an old expression that is very true. It says the proof is in the pudding. Actually, the expression, it's got its origins back in the 1500s, 1600s, right around there. But it says the proof of the pudding is in the tasting, is in the eating. If somebody tells you how good his pudding is, well, how do you know if what he's telling you is true? Taste it. And the proof of the pudding is in the tasting. And if it tastes terrible, I don't care what that person is saying to you, it's obviously not good. Now, we've shortened that little phrase to say the proof is in the pudding. But when it comes to voting, you have to look at what this person has done. What are they saying they're going to do, and what have they actually done? You know, when you interview somebody for a job, you look at that person's resume, and a resume is going to list achievements and list accomplishments. And let's face it, everybody presents himself, herself on paper in the most glowing of terms. You know, nobody puts on his resume, well, I was kind of marginal in this area, and you know, I didn't do very well at this job I had, and you know, I got C's on my report card in college. You know, they don't like to put that because they want to present themselves, you know, best foot forward, right? Your lead foot is not, you know, I'm really lazy. You're not going to mention that. It's kind of funny. So when an employer will say to a prospective employee, well, what are your weaknesses? Well, I'm probably a workaholic. I just work too much. I have a hard time shutting down. Well, that may be true, but, you know, that's, you're presenting things that you hope will sound good. Well, the proof of the pudding is in the tasting. And I was thinking about, you know, Gavin Newsom, the governor of California. California, the disaster state. That guy has done more to destroy the state. He's a terrible leader. And can you find some things that he has done well? Yes, I guess, by default, perhaps. But anything that he leads is a disaster because the guy doesn't tell the truth. You know, the high-speed rail that they were going to put in. Let me see if I can find the stats on that. I did a little research on the high-speed rail, and it was supposed to cost $35 million, and it's costing now, the cost of it has gone up to $130 billion, from $35 billion to $130 billion, and they don't have much of it completed. Only 171 miles under construction, no high-speed tracks done, and the destination from Merced to Bakersfield is delayed until 2030 to 2033. The promise was to have it done by 2020. Well, here it is, 2025. You're over budget 4x. And you have 171 miles under construction. I don't know how much. I mean, that's just under construction. Completed is, I guess, basically zero. You can't really go anywhere on it. What a disaster. Well, anybody that is over a project like that and is it that big of a disaster, and then somehow you're Teflon Don, you can just act like, well, it's no big deal. Fire preparedness. Well, that's a big issue if you live in California. And obviously, that guy would get an F minus for fire preparedness. He watched this city of the Palisades just burn to the ground. You know, he declares his war on poverty and we're going to fight homelessness. His management, that's a disaster. I mean, L.A., that whole area, it has just turned into one disaster city after another. Oakland, California. I grew up in Los Altos, California, not all that far from Oakland. But, I mean, this is back in the 70s. Oakland, you could feel this is a rough city. Well, now it's just so rough. And businesses, I think, In-N-Out shut down In-N-Out Burger in Oakland because they said it's just too dangerous to operate there. Those cities are a disaster. Crime is out of control. And that's under his watch. And so holding people accountable, you need to hold those guys accountable. And it floors me that a person like Gavin Newsom would say, hey, I can stand on the national stage and run for president when my resume is a total dumpster fire. No one should vote for a person like that. I asked AI about that. I said, would you vote for Gavin Newsom again? And I said, give me a yes or no. The answer was no. You know, if you ask AI a question, AI writes a book. And so I always have to tell AI, be concise. I don't want to read through reams of stuff. But would you vote for Gavin Newsom again? No. We need to hold people accountable. We need to hold politicians accountable for what they say versus what they actually do. Now, obviously, we know people dislike Donald Trump. Those on the left just can't stand the guy. No matter what he does, they just hate it. So what he's doing, liberating Washington, D.C. from crime, we hate it. It's terrible. Crime is great in D.C. The numbers are down. Everything is going good. This is an overkill. This is a political stunt. You know, it's just ridiculous. Everything that they're against. I saw Joe Scarborough, Morning Joe, and he said privately he got some texts from liberal friends, and they said, you know, I'm scared to go out after 8 o'clock at night, you know, because it's so terrible here in D.C. They would never say that on the air. They would never publicly say any of that. Why? Well, because that's not the talking point. But privately, they'll say that. And somebody said, you know, hey, Morning Joe, you ought to call those people out and let us know who they are. Because, you know, be honest. We get it that you hate Trump, but be honest. If the guy is doing something that is beneficial, be honest. Now, one of the things and one of the reasons I like President Trump is what he promised, he is delivering. Now, 100%, some of those things he promised, he's going to bring an end to the war. Well, he's trying to do that in Russia-Ukraine war, trying to bring the hostages back with Israel and the Hamas war. Those things, you can make big, you know, statements, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. But, I mean, you can't make those people do what you want them to do. They have a will and they have a say in it. But as far as Trump's campaign promises, he said he was going to secure the border. Guess what? He did that in short order, secured our southern border. He said he was going to deport criminals. Well, guess what? We're doing that. And we've deported, according to AI, 139 people by April 2025. Including lots of gang members. Reduce crime and make streets safer. He's working on that. He's working on that in D.C. and other places. He is working to get level the playing field as it relates to trade and international trade. And he's doing the issue with the tariffs. I heard Bill Maher say, you know, I thought that we would be in this deep recession by the summer, but that hasn't happened. And the tariffs seem to be working. And so, you know, a lot of the things that people were giving him grief about early on, it's like, well, let's see how this works. Well, it seems to be working. He said he was going to end DEI. Well, he is doing that. He said he was going to ban transgender athletes in women's sports. Guess what? He did that. He did that on day one. So he's fulfilling lots of campaign promises. Listen, we need to hold people accountable. The proof of the pudding is in the tasting. And when you look at results, it's important to look at results. Then you see, is this person doing what they said they were going to do? Well, you're listening to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here on American Family Radio. We're up against a break, but we'll be right back. Don't go away.
This is Real Truth for Today. Podcasts of the program are available on the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to Pastor Jeff Shreve.
Welcome back to the program. We're talking about holding people accountable, and we're using that statement, the proof is in the pudding. And we need to look and see when people run for office and they've been in office, well, what have you done? What have you accomplished? What did you tell us the last time that you were going to do versus how did you do it? You know, all of us who have worked in the business world, and even in the church world, you know about performance reviews. And a performance review is you sit down with your supervisor and he goes over, okay, this is the job. This is what we hired you to do. These are the tasks we gave you to do. How have you been performing? That's why it's called a performance review. And I made it very simple at First Baptist Texarkana. When I first came here, I said, here's the deal. You get an A, a B, or a C. And he'd go through things with you know, the supervisor would go through things with the employee. But A, B, or C. A means you're killing it. B means you're doing really, really good. C means you need to pick up the pace. And I would let the staff know, hey, you can't get too many C's in a row before we say this is probably not the place for you. It's not a... not a personal thing. It's not that we don't like you or love you, but you're not cutting the mustard, and you have to pick up the pace. You have to start fulfilling the job description in ways that you're not doing now, because you can get a C, but you can't get repeat C's and still work here. Well, we had a caller yesterday. We were talking about Donald Trump. We're talking about him liberating Washington, D.C. and the decisions that he made that, you know, I mean, he makes any decision and the left is going to be against it. But secretly, many people were for it, because if you live in D.C. or work in D.C., you want it to be safer. But we had a caller call in, and he was saying that Trump is just motivated by money. He's just in it for the money. And, you know, he's a terrible guy. You know, along those lines. He didn't say quite like that, but he talked about how it was all about money. It was all about optics and things like that. I think so. Do some accountability. The proof is in the pudding. I think it's interesting. So you think about Bill Clinton. Was he in it for the money? Well, he came into office. According to AI, his net worth was about $1.3 million. He left office. His net worth was $120 million. Made a lot of money in his time as president. Barack Obama, $1.3 million to $70 million. Joe Biden, $8 million to $10 million. Modest gain from Joe Biden. But he's been a lifetime politician, and he has $8 million in net worth. And Nancy Pelosi, in 2007, they said her net worth was $40 million. And when she left office, $370 million. Now, you know, she's embroiled in the controversy of insider trading. And how do you perform so well, better than all the hedge funds? Well, if you have inside information, that's how you do it. And as I mentioned on a program a week or two ago, you know, Bud Fox and Gordon Gekko had to go to prison for their insider trading. That's a crime. You can't do that. And to make that kind of money and just say, oh, we're just really good at picking stocks. Yeah, nobody believes that. Well, what did Donald Trump do his first term in office? He doesn't take a salary. Your $400,000 that you get as president, For somebody that's just in it for the money, as the caller said yesterday, it's kind of surprising that he doesn't take a salary. All those other guys took a salary. I'm not begrudging anybody for taking a salary, but Trump doesn't take his, and he lost coming into office versus leaving in 2020. He lost $1.1 billion in net worth. It cost him to be the president. He truly, based on the finances, he truly was doing this as a labor of love, not to enrich his pockets. So the proof is in the pudding. Now, you heard at the top of the program about Chip and Joanna Gaines. Chip and Joanna Gaines have this program that they're producing, promoting. Their names are behind it. And they have a homosexual couple with two boys that are in this frontier, to the frontier, whatever it's called. And they're fine with that. They're good with that. The Christian community, 1 million moms, calling them out. You say, well, is that a good thing to call them out? Yes. In the Christian life, we need to hold other Christians accountable. Now, in the book of Galatians, Paul held Peter accountable. Now, Peter is the Lord's top disciple. When you have the list of disciples, the first name is always Peter. And Peter was, he was the Lord's guy. Now, he is the one that denied the Lord, but he's in the big three, Peter, James, and John. They were the closest to Jesus. Saul, Paul says that he was a blasphemer and a persecutor and a violent aggressor. He's the least of all the apostles. But the least of all the apostles had the courage to confront Peter when he came to Antioch. Galatians chapter 2, verse 11, it says, "But when Cephas," another name for Peter, "came to Antioch, I opposed him to his face because he stood condemned, for prior to the coming of certain men from James, he used to eat with the Gentiles. But when they came," these are the Jews, "he began to withdraw and hold himself aloof, fearing the party of the circumcision. The rest of the Jews joined him in hypocrisy, with the result that even Barnabas was carried away by their hypocrisy. But when I saw that they were not straightforward with the truth of the gospel, I said to Cephas in the presence of all, 'If you, being a Jew, live like the Gentiles and not like the Jews, how is it that you compel the Gentiles to live like Jews?' He opposed him to his face." Why? Because he was wrong. He stood condemned. And we need that in the Christian life. We need to hold people accountable. And we need to make sure that just because someone talks a big game, you need to look to see how does that translate into your life. Now, one of the things about a pastor, you know, when you're looking for a pastor, I think this is really important for any church, for a pastor search committee. What do you look at when you're interviewing this guy? You look at just what he says about himself on paper, on his resume. Obviously, that's one of the things you look at. You look at his track record. How has he done at other churches? And you look at his marriage and his family, because an overseer must be above reproach, the husband of one wife, temperate, prudent, respectable, hospitable, able to teach, not addicted to wine or pugnacious. That means he doesn't like to always get in fights with people, verbal sparring, but gentle, peaceable, free from the love of money. That's really critical. And one who manages his own household well, keeping his children under control with all dignity. But if a man does not know how to manage his own household, how will he take care of the church of God? Hey, Pastor Search Committee, look at his family. Make sure you interview him with his wife and see what their relationship is like and see what their family is like, because that's a microcosm of how he's going to run the church and how he's going to lead the church. And look to see how he handles his finances. You know, that's one of the things that's really critical. Some pastors can get churches in bad financial shape, and you ask yourself, well, they're bankrupting the church. They're making, you know, they're just spending money, and it's just awful. Well, look to see how he spends his own money. Look to see what his own credit score is and those kinds of things. I think those are important to know. And if the guy is constantly in debt, if he can't manage his money well, that's a big red flag. Well, we need to have accountability in the Christian life. Chip and Joanna Gaines don't like the fact that the Christian community is calling them out, but they need to be called out. Now, we're not calling them out because we're mad at them, or we hate them, or we're trying to hurt them, or let's boycott Chip and Joanna, we're going to make them suffer. It's not about that at all. Paul didn't call out Peter to make him suffer, called him out to say, hey, this is wrong. You are deviating from the path. And as it says in the book of Isaiah, this is the way, walk in it. And we need that from one another. You know, all of us have blind spots. You have them, I have them, we have them. And you need to have, Debbie and I talked about this last week, you need to have a trusted friend, somebody that you know who loves you, who can tell you, hey, you're not seeing this correctly. You need to pray about this area. I've heard John MacArthur say this before. People were asking him about being a celebrity pastor. You know, he doesn't ever think like that. He didn't. He's in heaven now. But some guys think like that. Well, he didn't think like that. He just wanted to be a faithful pastor. And he made this statement. He said, you know, it's very hard to get into the minds of someone else to see how you are perceived. And it really is. You know, we don't know how we come across. My girls will tell me, you know, Dad, you can be very intimidating to people. And, you know, I'm thinking, I'm not intimidating at all. I'm nice to everybody. And they said, no, you can come across that way if you're not careful. And so that helps me, you know, because I don't want to be in. Sometimes I do, you know, when the girls were dating somebody, I think it was good to be a little intimidating. My friend Dick Hill is in heaven now. He had two girls, and he was the nicest guy. Everybody loved Dick. He was the worship pastor at Champion Forest when I was there. But he told me, he said, when the boys were coming around and dating my girls, he said, I purposely was very stern with them. I wanted to put the fear of God into those boys' hearts, and so they knew that I wasn't a pushover. So I do think some of that is important. But listen, do you have somebody in your life that can hold you accountable? And do you constantly hold yourself accountable before the Lord? Psalm 139, verses 23 and 24, a prayer that we need to pray on a regular basis. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my anxious thoughts, and see if there be any evil, hurtful way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. Now, I believe that every true Christian wants to please the Lord. That desire comes from the Lord who lives inside. We want to glorify Him. We don't want to dishonor Him. Now, when we sin, we dishonor God, and we can get tangled up in all kinds of sin. Hebrews chapter 12, the sin which so easily entangles us. But nobody wants, no true Christian wants that, wants to dishonor God. We want to walk in the light as He Himself is in the light. Because if we say we have fellowship with Him, and yet we walk in the darkness, we know we're allowing things in our lives that aren't right. Well, the Bible says we lie and do not practice the truth. And when we're walking in pride, God is opposed to the proud. He gives grace to the humble. And we are going to suffer for it, because the Lord he's too faithful to let us go and to let us continue on. He's a good parent, and we're going to be disciplined for our disobedience. It's not going to go well with us if we're walking in the darkness and pretending like everything is right. So we need to keep coming before the Lord. We need to keep having people hold us accountable. We need to look at our lives in light of, you know, how well am I doing? Am I pursuing the Lord with all my heart? Am I working my job to the best of my ability? The Bible says in 1 Corinthians 10:31, whether then you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. No matter what you're doing, if it's moral and legal and an upstanding job, washing dishes, digging ditches, whatever it is, you can do it for the glory of God. And we need to be, as Christians, we need to be a force in the job market and in the marketplace to say, this is what a Christian does. You know, Daniel and his three friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, their Babylonian names, Ananias, Azariah, and Mishael were their Hebrew names, good names that they had. But they made an impact with the wise men of Babylon. They stood out. When a man's ways are pleasing to the Lord, you stand out. It is by his deeds that a lad distinguishes himself, if his conduct is pure and right, the Proverbs say. And so as we walk in the light with Jesus, as we let him shine through us, as people see our good works, as we respond in a way that is different from the world, you know, people insult us and we respond. We bless those who curse us. We pray for those who despitefully use us. We respond in a way that is godly. That gets their attention. And that shows them that there really is something to our Christianity. We're not just checking a box. We're not just playing a role. We're really seeking the Lord. We're really desiring to honor him and glorify him. Well, you're listening to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here. And when we come back from the break, we'll be taking your calls. And we've been talking about this, holding people accountable. And, the proof is in the pudding. And then having accountability in your own life. Listen, you struggle with things. I struggle with things. We struggle with things. Accountability really helps. A Christian community really helps. A trusted friend who loves you and wants to see you soar with the Lord, that is really important. And that person can help you a lot. So I'd love to hear from you, 888-589-8840. That's 888-589-8840. If you have a question, if you have a comment, if you have a brief testimony, give me a call and let's talk.
Candace talks about finding out she was pregnant. Thankfully, an ultrasound provided by Preborn allowed her to hear her baby's heartbeat.
The sonogram sealed the deal for me. My baby was like this tiny little spectrum of hope. And I saw his heart beating on the screen. And knowing that there's life growing inside, I mean, that sonogram changed my life. I went from just Candace to mom. Thank you to everybody that has given these gifts. You guys are giving more than money. You guys are giving love.
Preborn currently has clinics that do not have ultrasound machines. Would you consider a leadership gift and sponsor a machine today? These life-saving machines cost $15,000, more than most centers can afford. Your donation will save countless lives for years to come. Dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or go to preborn.com/AFR.
If you'd like to contact Pastor Jeff, email pastorjeff@fromhisheart.org. Now, back to Real Truth for Today with Pastor Jeff Shreve.
Welcome back to the program. Pastor Jeff here. We're talking about the proof is in the pudding. We're talking about holding people accountable, holding politicians accountable, holding other Christians accountable, holding yourself accountable. Listen, we live in a fallen world. You're a fallen person. I'm a fallen person. Even as a redeemed person, you deal with your old sinful flesh. So do I. And so we have to constantly walk by the Spirit. Paul said in Galatians, but I say, walk by the Spirit and you will not carry out the desire of the flesh. That's a constant fight. The flesh sets its desire against the Spirit and the Spirit against the flesh, for these are in opposition to one another, so you may not do the things that you please. Now, the proof is in the pudding. James chapter 2, He talks about faith without works being dead. He said, "What use is it, my brethren, if someone says he has faith, but he has no works? Can that faith save him? If a brother or sister is without clothing and in need of daily food, and one of you says to them, 'Go in peace, be warmed and be filled,' and yet you do not give them what is necessary for the body, what use is that? You didn't help them any. You could have helped them, but you didn't help them." And then he uses that as an example. He says, "Even so, faith, if it has no works, is dead, being by itself. But someone may well say, 'You have faith and I have works.' Show me your faith without the works, and I will show you my faith by my works. You believe that God is one, you do well. The demons also believe and shudder. But are you willing to recognize, you foolish fellow, that faith without works is useless?" Now, it's faith alone that saves, as a professor in college told me, a Bible professor. Faith alone saves, but faith is never alone, because real, genuine faith in the Lord Jesus always brings about life change. And works are not the root of salvation, but they're the fruit of salvation. And if there are no good works in your life, it's because you've never truly been saved. Well, we're going to the phone lines, 888-589-8840. That's 888-589-8840. If you have a question, a comment, a brief testimony, how the Lord has changed your life, and how there is the proof in the pudding, and that you have benefited from people holding you accountable, we would love to hear from you. And so we have Randy on the line from Alabama. Randy, welcome to Real Truth for Today.
Hi, Pastor Jeff. I appreciate you taking my call.
Yes, sir.
So my question is, how should we, or how would you respond to Christians who criticize us for voting for Donald Trump in light of his past moral failures, or perceived moral failures, mm-hmm. you know, women that he may have been with. I think they even say that he was possibly a pedophile, but you know, I don't know if there's proof of that, but it disturbs me when I hear people, you know, going along that line. I did vote for Donald Trump. There were other people that I personally thought would be better candidates, but there was no way I could vote for the Democratic platform. Mm-hmm. So basically, I was just wondering how you would respond to somebody that's critical of us voting for him.
Yeah, great question, Randy. Well, Trump is a very flawed candidate. I do think Trump, and I've talked to people that know him and have gotten to talk to him about his soul. A pastor friend of mine said he really believes Trump has trusted Christ. I think the fact that the Lord spared his life in Butler, Pennsylvania, no doubt had a big impact on him. And but Trump's if he is a believer, he's a baby Christian. And so he's had, you know, 78 years of being a certain way. And does the Lord change a life? Yes, he does. But you see Trump on display. I mean, he's up in front all the time. He's fielding questions. As Megyn Kelly said, he's the most transparent president we've ever had. And Trump likes to engage with people, and he likes to answer questions. And, you know, but he's a lightning rod. And so even if he's a baby believer, you can imagine how would you have done had you been a Christian for 6 months or a year or even 2 years, and you're constantly on television, constantly being grilled, constantly being attacked and run through the mud. We probably wouldn't handle it very well. So I do what you do, Randy. I tell people, listen, I had a choice between a candidate and a platform that there's no way on God's green earth that the Lord would have me support that, for the killing of the unborn, for transgender insanity, for mutilating young kids with gender-affirming care. What is that? That's performing grotesque surgeries on kids that don't have any business making that decision, 10-year-olds, 12-year-olds. It's awful. And you can't support that. You can't support open borders. Our country would just disintegrate. That just doesn't work. And so the things that that the Democrats were supporting and that their policies are all, gung-ho about, as John MacArthur said, they get their platform straight from the sins of Romans chapter 1. Well, no Christian, true Christian who wants to walk in the light with the Lord can support that. Now, you can try and gouge out your own eyes so you don't see that. You can be willingly ignorant, but you have to take a look at this and say, okay, can I support this? In Old Testament Israel, you can't be worshiping Baal and worshiping God. That doesn't work. Those are mutually exclusive. As the prophet Elijah said in 1 Kings chapter 18, said to the people, how long will you hesitate between two opinions? If God is God, fear him. If Baal is God, fear him and serve him. But you can't be riding the fence with one foot in the biblical world, one foot in the church world, so to speak, and one foot in the world of Baal and serving Baal. That doesn't work. God is, he's not happy with that. His throne room is not a duplex. He's not going to be happy that you throw him the crumbs. I mean, it's all or nothing with the Lord. Jesus said, how long will you call me Lord, Lord, and do not do the things that I say? If I'm your Lord, then obey me. And if I'm not, then let's quit pretending. And so that kind of thing was happening in Israel, and they had to come out and put their faith and trust and allegiance to the Lord, Jehovah God, solely. The you can't compromise. And so I think the people that vote blue and call themselves Christians, they either don't know what it means to be a Christian, or they've just gotten so polluted in things. I have friends that it doesn't matter who, they're just going to vote blue. And it's like, hey, you got to look at this more closely. I personally wouldn't do that. If the Republican candidate were some guy that, he's off the rails on so many, there's no way I'd vote for that guy. Now, we didn't have a good pro-life candidate. Trump was much stronger on pro-life issues in 2016 than he was in 2020. And some guys said, well, I'm not going to vote for him. But it's still the lesser of two evils. And what Trump has done since his time in office, which is 6+ months, it's unbelievable the reforms he's bringing about that Christians are for. We are for law and order. We are for moral sanity. Trump is for those things, and he's putting his efforts where his mouth is, and he's trying to fulfill his campaign promises, and he's doing a great job with that. And so is he doing everything perfectly? No. Would you do it like that, or I do it like that? No, we're not perfect leaders either, but we can get behind him. And so I think that Randy, we tell people, yeah, I did vote for him, and the proof is in the pudding. I like what I see. I appreciate the fact that he said he was going to do X, and he's doing X, and he's keeping his campaign promises. And Trump is a businessman; he's not a politician, so he. He wants to get things done. Politicians like to talk about things. Talk. And we vote for bills, and we're going to spend all this money. Oh, look, we're going to attack the poverty situation. It's a war on poverty, and we're going to do all these things. We still have poverty coming out our ears. And so now we're just poorer as a country because we've spent all this money on poverty. We haven't really helped anybody. You know, the way you help people with poverty is you get them to a place where they're not in poverty anymore. You don't keep supporting them in their poverty. You help them get out. When we have people come to the church and they're in a dire situation and, I can't pay my electricity bill, can't pay my water bill, you have to sit down with that person and say, okay, so we want to help you, but listen, we can't, as a friend of mine says, we can't take you to raise. So if you have trouble paying your electricity bill this month, what's going to change for next month? Because if you have more month than money, you're going to continue to have that. You got to make changes. You got to cut expenses. You got to get more income in. You got to do the things necessary to make ends meet. So that's a long answer, Randy, but that would be my answer to that. And we don't need to feel bad about that. We just need to say, hey, those were the two candidates. These are the two platforms. One of those two people was going to be the president, and I voted for the person I thought was going to help the country in a biblical way, in a biblical worldview, much more so than the other candidate. And the other candidate said, I'm going to keep doing what Joe Biden did. And so we knew that was a disaster. So is that helpful?
It is. I appreciate that answer. I've also heard people say they just weren't going to vote. I mean, how do you address that?
Well, yeah. So if the good and godly people, those that have a right heart toward the Lord, if they don't vote, then it's kind of like, well, if all of God's people get out of politics, who's going to be leading things? The devil's crowd. And so then things are going to be crammed down our throats that we don't want. And so we've had many people on the program over the months and years that say it is imperative for Christians to vote. It's a crime to not vote. As the Lord told those exiles in Babylon, hey, you seek for the welfare of this city. Babylon's a pagan place. Nebuchadnezzar's the king. Seek for the welfare of this city, for in its welfare you find welfare. I like what my friend Bishop E.W. Jackson says. It's fine to pray for America and to get involved in America. He said, we live here. We want this to be a good place to live, and it's going to be a good place to live if we get involved and we make sure that people who have right values, they know the difference between right and wrong, if those people are put into positions of leadership and authority. Romans 1 talks about those people that don't want to see fit to acknowledge God any longer. What does God do? He gives them over to a depraved mind, a reprobate mind, a mind that no longer functions, a mind that fights for biological men to be able to use a women's restroom, a woman's locker room, to play in girls' sports. That's just insane. It's ludicrous. You go back in time 100 years, and you were going to start promoting those things in 1925 America. They'd say they'd put you in an insane asylum. You have lost your mind. And we have a whole slew of people, and they seem to always vote left. But the slew of people that say, "Yeah, that's right. We biological men. What is a woman? They can't answer that question." Ketanji Jackson Brown can't answer that question. What is a woman? I'm not a biologist. You don't have to be a biologist. You don't even have to be older than 5 to know what a woman is. My little grandson Jack and Chase is 2. They know the difference between men and women, between boys and girls. Now, they might not be able to verbalize it, but they know this is a boy, this is a girl, this is a man, this is a woman. It's very simple. But when you reject God, then he gives you over to this reprobate mind, and your mind no longer functions. So it is important, Randy, for Christians to get involved, for Christians to vote, for Christians to stay abreast of what's going on in our world. And that's one of the benefits of American Family Radio, American Family Association. We want to keep the Christian community in the know. So we'd be like the sons of Issachar to understand the times and what we should do. So thanks for that call, and thanks for listening to Real Truth for Today. And it's a joy for me to be able to host every morning. Pastor Jeff Shreve, the pastor of First Baptist Church in Texarkana, Texas, and the founder of From His Heart Ministries. From His Heart is heard every weeknight at 6 p.m. Central Time right here on American Family Radio. Tomorrow, I'm going to welcome my wife, Debbie, to the program. And she is back in the swing of things, so she'll be with me tomorrow. Topic is TBD, to be determined. So I hope that you tune in. Go out today, shine for Christ, and share what great things the Lord has done for you. And know that God will use you as His witness. God bless you.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.